Today is August 28, 2013. This is Desiree Hargis on behalf of the H.J. Lucher Stark Center for Physical Culture and Sports. As part of the 1968 U.S. Olympic Team Legacy Archive, I am interviewing Keith Russell over the phone about his experiences in the 1968 Olympic Games in Mexico City. Keith, can you first begin with when and where you were born?
I was born in Mesa, Arizona, in January 1st, 1948.
And tell me a little bit about where you grew up.
Well, I grew up in Mesa, which is near Phoenix, Arizona. And just that, you know, when I was growing up, the city was probably around 25 or 30,000, and it's probably about 400 or maybe even 500,000 right now. So anyway, you know, it was a situation where my family, we had 9 kids, and my dad was a elementary school teacher, and my mom was, she didn't work, but so she, you know, hauled us around a little bit there. We'd go down to the pool. There was a local pool. There's the a city pool there, and that's where it all started, at the Rendezvous swimming pool.
So, did you start with swimming first and then get into diving, or how did that work?
Yes, what happened is that my siblings and myself, we would go down and swim, and what happened is the swimming coach, Mary Willard, saw us swimming and invited us to be on the swimming team. And so we started swimming, and I was a swimmer. And then what happened is that at that time, sort of like in college today, swimming and diving, they bring in points for the team. So back then, and swimming and diving was the same sport, which technically it still is, but back then the points for diving counted for the swimming points, and my swimming coach's daughter, Patsy Willard, started diving for Dick Smith in Phoenix so that we could get more points. My mom grew up, for some reason, she would go to the pool like we did, and she would see these divers diving, and she wanted to have a diver in her family, and invited me to go to be a diver. And so I started diving along with Patsy Willard with Dick Smith in Phoenix, and basically that's kind of where it all started. By the time I was 13, I had decided that diving was going to be the best way for me to go. And so I started from then, from 13 on, to, you know, dedicated, you know, myself to diving. Mm-hmm. Just as a point of interest, perhaps, is that what happened is that Patsy Willard ended up going to the 1960 Olympic Games. And because of that, then there were many, many divers from around the nation that then, because of that, came to Phoenix to dive with Dick Smith, and you know, including some of the most important people even today, Tom Gumpf, for example. Tom Gumpf has been probably the most influential American diver administrator in the world. He's done so many things for U.S. diving, and including being a judge, as well as being on the technical committee for U.S. for FINA. And so he's probably one of the best examples of the results of all those people coming. But by the next Olympics in 1964, for example, Dick Smith, my coach, had a whole host of divers that then went to the Olympics, including Tom Gumpf, Frank Gorman, and and several others that went to the Olympics and got medals at the Olympics there in Tokyo.
So were those divers that you looked up to, and did you emulate them or think, well, if they're going to the Olympics, then maybe I can too? Oh,
absolutely. In my mind, you know, when Patsy made the Olympic team, just like I say, Patsy Willard from Mesa, Arizona, and from nowhere, you know, I mean, we were, you know, virtually small town, no big deal. And when she made the Olympic team and when all these other people came in, then I realized that the Olympic team was totally something that almost that you just did. You know, it wasn't like such, it was a big deal, clearly, but it wasn't like that big of a deal. It was just like, okay, well, that's what we're going to do, and so that's kind of the approach or attitude that I had toward the whole thing. And you know, I knew, like I say, I knew it was a big deal, but I didn't realize really, you know, kind of what kind of a big deal it was. But but yeah, these other people, Tom Gumpf and Frank Gorman and many others that made the team, Jeannie Collier, for example, got a silver medal in the 1964 Olympic Games, and others that came. Anyway, we, you know, sure, I looked up to them, and it was a definitely an eye opener for for me, because I went to the Olympic trials in 1964. I could see what it took to make the Olympic team, and I was 16 at the time, so I ended up being 11th in the trials, and so I really, you know, didn't really have a chance. But at the same time, there are some, you know, obviously some good things that you can see. Some examples that of how to do and why it's important to work hard and to do the things that we did. One of those divers in the 1964 Olympic trials in New York that didn't make the team was Bernie Wrightson, who, and the next go-around, you know, we dove together then for I don't know how many more years. You know, he was a diver that came from Denver to go to Arizona State and be a diving protege for Dick Smith again. Well, he made the Olympic team in 1968 and made the gold medal and earned the gold medal there in Mexico City. So, in other words, it was, you know, we were definitely on a, I don't know if you would call it a roll, but definitely we had some momentum to do that.
Mm. What social, psychological, or financial support structures were available to you during this time to ensure that you were able to continue participating in diving?
Well, in that period of time, there wasn't really anything that I knew of. The only structure I had was home. You know, my family, like I said, we had nine kids in the family, so I had eight siblings, and it was a real sacrifice on everybody's part, because, you know, I would have to go to these competitions, and from time to time I wouldn't go to a competition because it would cost money to do that, and so I would do different things, but basically my parents paid my way. Back in those days, it was a little easier to, you know, it didn't cost quite as much as it does now, for sure. Also, you know, we would go and to a meet and maybe like stay in the dorms at the wherever we went, cheap, you know, in inexpensive places. And of course, then, for example, the first national championship I won. Well, we drove from Arizona to Arlington, Texas, basically Fort Worth, to, you know, I drove for a couple of days to get there, and there were times when you know, we went by automobile most of the time, and I went to nationals and back east quite often, you know, and not necessarily back east, but to say Chicago by driving, for example. And so you save expenses every once in a while as well. I would get some money from an entity such as the Mesa Chamber of Commerce, for example. You know, just different entities that would give a few $100 and make a difference. You know, it really made a difference, and for me, that went a long way. And so, we scrounged a lot. You know, like I say, we went to the Olympic Trials. We drove and things like this all the way to New York to do that. So, in other words, back in those days, there was no psychological or there were no things other than maybe at the NCAA level where they would get a scholarship at a university. Well, I wasn't old enough at the time, but so when I made it to the Olympics in 1968, I was going to Arizona State, so that was different then, and then I went on and graduated from BYU, Brigham Young University, where I am now. But you know, that way I could at least get a scholarship to live, you know, to go to school and at least survive. But back before that time, before going to college, there was no real support except for the family. You know, I didn't go to any trainers. I didn't go to any psychologists. I didn't go to anyone that really knew anything about weight training. For example, weight training, weights, and so forth like this. You know, by the time I, finished diving, my diving career, that weights and flexibility and that sort of thing started becoming more and more in the vogue or used, and people did that sort of thing, but I never really did, because it was by the time I got, to finished my career, it was almost too late, to do that sort of thing. But anyway, the point is, there was no real support at the time that I was growing up in diving. It was just a matter of just doing what your coach said to do, basically working out in the morning for, say, 3 hours, and then working out another 3 hours in the afternoon. That's pretty much all that I did. I didn't really do anything else besides that for many years.
Keith, can you describe some of your competition highlights, major wins or achievements on the road to the 68 Olympic trials?
Well, like I say, probably the best thing that happened was, like I said, I was able to win a couple of national championships just when I was 19. Some members of the team from Dick Smith Swim Gym there, were able or willing to drive, they were going to the nationals as well, so I went with them. Mm-hmm. in this automobile, and we drove from Phoenix or from Arizona to Texas, and I don't know, sometimes things such as that probably was a good thing, because I was in my own little self and didn't have to worry about a lot of other things. I guess the main thing was that when I got there, I qualified fifth to go into the finals. And in those days, you just did one list of dives, and you did the last three dives in the evening. So after seven dives, I was in fifth place. And in that evening, then you come back and you do the last three dives. Well, I was able to, for some reason, just perform the very best I could ever do that as a 19-year-old in the Senior National Diving Championships, which also ended up being, it was also the qualifying event to go to the Pan Am Games. So, I guess because I didn't have any particular expectation, sure, I wanted to win, and sure, you think you're going to possibly win, thing, so forth like that, but for some reason, I was able to do my very best and put all three dives down very well. And at the same moment in time, the Bernie Wrightson and a few others like that really were probably, as I look back now, were probably actually better than I was. They didn't maybe dive as good as they could have. In fact, I'm sure they didn't dive as good as they could have. And so that combination of my diving my very best and they're not maybe diving as the very best that they could then allowed me to win the 3-meter national diving championship in 1967. Now, the thing that what happened though, and this happened every time, was that when I won one national championship that in that particular national meet, in other words, the next day was platform, and for some reason, I just relaxed when that happened, and was able to win the platform as well, and so I was able to win a couple of national championships in Arlington, Texas, the University of Texas at Arlington, in 1967 as a 19-year-old going to school there at Arizona State. But you know, it's just one of those things where your mind just kind of relaxes and that allows you to do it. And that then happened again in the summertime in Chicago. The same thing happened. I was able to win one of the, I can't remember if I dove platform first or 3-meter first, but then I was able to win one event, one either 3-meter or platform, and then I was able to win the next one. I never won a 1-meter national championship, but it was always a combination of one. If I won a 3-meter championship, then I won the platform championship. Anytime that I won a national championship, that's the way it went. And so it was those things that, you know, are positioned next to the next year, which is, that is in 1967. Now the next year is 1968 for the Olympics. And those, that, you know, was pretty good encouragement for me to really be motivated for the next year in 1968. And then, of course, what happened is that because of, you know, going to those meets and so forth and being able to go to the Pan American Games, Bernie Wrightson actually won the 3-meter Pan American Games there in Canada. But I was second, so it was a good experience, and again a lot of motivation. And then I was able to go to that same year, that same 1967 summer, go to the World University Games in Tokyo, and I won the 3-meter event there. So it was a good year, a good setup for the next year, for the 1968 year. And then in 1968. The beginning of the year, in say March, is when the NCAA has their nationals, and I was able to win the 3-meter national NCAA title as well. So again, those things were all building up and setting you up to make the Olympic team. And it doesn't guarantee, because in the summer, just before the Olympic trials in the summertime of 1968. I went to the nationals and completely blew it. It was just one of those things, I think, where you have probably all these pressures and you don't realize you're feeling that pressure, I don't think. And I think that's kind of what happened at the Olympics itself. But, you know, I really didn't. I dove pretty poorly, and I didn't even make finals at the 3-meter national championships there in Nebraska. But you know, because of the previous year, then you don't give up and you still think you have a chance. So that year in that summer in 1968, in Long Beach, they had the Olympic trials there, and you know, things fell into place for me there. I dove well. I don't know if I dove my very best, but at least I dove well. And in those circumstances, there are a lot of people who don't do the very best that they can do. And so there, you know, that opens up the door sometimes, allowing you to make a few mistakes. So I qualified second on 3-meter and qualified first on platform at the 1968 Olympic trials.
Mm. And how did your friends and family and people that knew you, how did they react to finding out that you'd made the Olympic team?
Well, it was, obviously that was, particularly for my parents, that was, family and so forth and so on. Kind of a redeeming thing for the family to, at least after all the sacrifice and all the time and all the effort and all the time, just on and on and on, it just, that really made a lot of difference for them. And it was exciting for a lot of people. There were people who were kind enough to actually take my parents down to the Olympic Games. They were that kind and realized the meaning of what happened is that they drove my parents from Mesa, Arizona, all the way down to Mexico City to be able to watch the Olympic Games there, watch me dive in the Olympic Games. So, yeah, that was pretty exciting. But the thing is that has not, in so many ways, that has, you go through your life now, how many years later, 40 or 45 late years later, you still talk to, your cousins or other people, friends and so forth, that you realize the impact and the, how much that meant to them, and that they can say, or, I guess you might say in a way of celebrity, they think, wow, my cousin or my friend is an Olympian. That gravitates them to the whole long years and efforts and sacrifices as well, I think. It's a very significant thing that happens when you make the Olympic team. It's not just for you. It's a lot of people are able to enjoy, I guess, even just life, just a little bit more because of the things that happen there. And so it's been a great thing. I realize that the Olympic team, the Olympic Games are really important. I think they're great and everything, but I think Bernie Wrightson put it probably as good as anything. He said something like, "Well, I won a gold medal, but I just want you to know it's really not that big. It's not that big a deal. I mean, you realize that you're there at the very peak of everything, and someone's going to win, and someone is not, and it's just the way it is. But so you learn a lot of things along the way, because that's one of the harder things that I had to learn, was that you can't necessarily win every time. You just can't. It's just not going to happen. So the things that are the good that it does for people, it's great. But probably the learning that you have, that you gain, is probably even more important. Some of the people that I knew who made the team, even with me, I realized later, after they did all the good things that they did, didn't learn all the lessons that there are to learn. And they could have, it could have been a better deal for them and for their family and everybody else if, we really do actually learn the lessons. I don't think, I think that it's all great and wonderful, but the bottom line is we got to almost keep that, what we did learn, we got to go on and keep that which we've learned and do even better.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about training camp in Colorado and preparation for the Olympic Games and the altitude in Mexico City?
We, as you said, we went to Colorado Springs at the Air Force Academy to train. I don't know what it was, but for me, it wasn't a very good situation. I didn't feel comfortable. And So it was a really hard time for me to train, and I don't know if that was my fault or whether it was just the way it is. You know, sometimes you go to do things and it just doesn't work. It just, no matter how you cut it, how you look at it. The altitude I didn't feel like bothered me. Maybe it did more than I thought it did or whatever. But I just for some reason just never really got into the swing of things. People go surfing and you get on to do surfing, you get on a wave and you ride the wave and that I never quite caught the wave I felt like that, it was fine. I didn't really think too much about it. At the time, I didn't think that it was that big of a deal. But now I can see that was a much bigger thing than I thought it was. That to somehow get a rhythm, get a sense of okay, here's what I'm doing, and here's where I'm going, and this is how to how to get there. And so while the facilities were fine and the people were good and certainly certain things were wonderful. I just never quite got back onto the like at the Olympic trials. I never quite got back to the swing of that right there. That you just feel like you can do practically anything. I felt like I had to just work my everything to make every dive and every time and every situation. It was, like having weights on and instead of being free. And so that was a tough time for me. And the part of the problem is I didn't realize that it was that way. I just almost accepted it as just, okay, that's the way it is, and I should have probably, taken time off or talked to my coach or something, but I didn't do that. And so that could have been a better situation. There was a lot of things, but I think that was the main thing. I just didn't ever quite get back into the swing of things.
Mm. Was there anyone on the team with whom you were particularly close?
Well, Bernie Wrightson was the one that, we had been together on the same team for probably by then 7 or 8 years, maybe, So, he and I were very close. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was close to the other ones too, as far as that goes, because when you dive as long as we all dove for a long, long time. And so, we all knew each other, I think, pretty well. But Bernie was the closest one. And then Wynn Young was also from Arizona. He went to Indiana University, so he wasn't really hadn't been with us in Arizona for a long time. But we grew up together as well. And so I felt like I had a lot of friends on the team. Yeah,
mm.
Yeah, and like I say, there were other members of the team. There were Annie Peterson, for example, was also a member of the Dick Smith Swim Gym, and she was there on platform working out and so forth. So we had a good situation. I don't know why it wasn't as good as it could have been, but it just didn't end up being that way.
Hmm. While you were preparing for the Olympics, do you remember hearing anything about possible protests or boycotts by members of the U.S. track team?
I didn't. I didn't realize anything until it actually happened. And then I realized that was a big deal. And I realized, I think more than that, I think what I realized was that the Russians had invaded Czechoslovakia. I think that was the thing that was really on my mind at the time of the Olympics in 1968, was that scenario, that I don't know if you'd call it political or whatever, but it was kind of a big deal, and I thought there were a lot of guns around, a lot of people, a lot of soldiers in the city there, and perhaps I wasn't prepared for that. I didn't think that. I didn't understand that, and it kind of was weird to me. It was a little bit tense, but you know, not a big deal. But at the same time, wow, you know, I realized that those things were going on, and then you know, like you said, when the you know, the gloves were put on at the track there and so forth, Juan Carlos and all that, I you know, gosh, I felt really bad, and I felt like, wow, this is I didn't realize the Olympics was a political deal here. You know, I thought we were just all sportsmen and doing the things that we were doing, and yeah, somewhat naive. I realize that now, but that's what I thought then.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember hearing anything about student protests and violence in Mexico City about 10 days before the start of the games?
I didn't. I kind of realized that a little bit, but no, no, I didn't know. I did not realize that there was a big deal, or if there was, I didn't know it was a big deal. I heard a little bit of something, but it, to me, by the time, you know, I got there and everything, that was not on my mind at all.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned seeing soldiers with guns in Mexico City. What other impressions of Mexico City and its people did you have when you first arrived?
It was pretty amazing. I thought that it was really to me, a really good deal. It was a good thing, and I think the Olympics, this is what I think the Olympics embodies, is that it opens up the doors for people of every nation, creed, color, and so forth and so on. And that's what I felt there, is because you would go to the Olympic Village and people would want your autograph, you know, and they didn't even know who you were. And yet they were open to talk to you and to, you know, kind of get involved with you if they could, you know, and that's a very good, I think that's probably the best thing that the Olympics does for people, for the world and so forth, is it gives that opportunity for, people wherever they are to know and realize that that's who we are, just people. And we're all the same, and we're all trying to do, you know, live our lives the best we can and so forth like that. And so that's the impression I had when I got the Olympics in Mexico City.
Were you able to venture out into the city, go sightseeing, or make any friends who lived in the host city? Anything like that?
Not much. I did go to, they did take us to the pyramids there in Mexico City, but that's about the only thing that I did, other than, like you say, you know, between workouts and between events, you go out and you are there at the Olympic Village and you talk to, you're able to talk to some of the people from around the world. And that was that part was a great experience. But I never really talked to them to the point or was able to be involved enough to, you know, to make friends, for example. But in terms of meeting a lot of people, that was a great experience, yes.
Mm-hmm. What were the accommodations like in the Olympic Village?
Well, the Olympic Village for us, I don't know, I'm assuming that everybody was like that, but they just had these big, tall apartment buildings, and so they each room or area was, you know, you had probably around I think we had about six people in each of our apartments. I was probably on the like the 10th or 12th floor of a building that was probably 16 or 18 stories high, you know. So I don't know how tall it was, but it just seemed like it was really tall, and that I was way up there somewhere. And it was a good experience to, because I was, you know, I was kind of in a room by myself, but you know, like I say, you know, there were several rooms in there, and there were, in our apartment complex, there were several rooms, and we had swimmers and divers as combined. So it was good to meet some of the swimmers and, you know, kind of be with them.
Hmm. What are your memories of the opening ceremony?
Not much. I remember coming out, marching in there in the into the stadium, and it was a great experience to see all those people that were willing to come and see that happen. I didn't understand why they would all take the time to do that, but it was, from my vantage point, I couldn't really see too much, and yet you knew that it was a big deal, you know, marching with all those people in all those uniforms and behind our flag. You knew that was a momentous moment in my life, in your personal life.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned meeting many people from other countries. Did you have any interactions with anyone from the Soviet bloc? You mentioned Soviet Union invading Czechoslovakia. Did you interact with any of those athletes from those countries?
I never did. For some reason, I never saw them in the Olympic Village, for example. Talked to them a little briefly at practices and so forth, but really didn't get to know them at that time. I later on in another life I did, because but at that time, you know, we never had interchanges with the Russians, for example, whereas later on we did. We had quite a few interactions, dual meet competitions with the Soviets, for example, later on. But until that time, I really didn't ever come up against or have connections with them at all. So, no. And, you know, especially I think in those days, the Soviets, they pretty much, the Russians and the Soviet bloc, is what I'm trying to say, is they, it seemed to me, really held back. They were not outgoing at all. And I suppose I wasn't either, but there wasn't a lot of opportunity to do that as well. I didn't think, because I can say that now, because later on we did. We had a lot of interchanges. And so, yeah, I got to know a lot of the Russians and so forth, and become friends with them, and again, open up that dialogue and become like the Olympic Games it opens up those avenues, but back in those days, it was not that way. Now that I see it, now that I've gone through what I've gone through, I can see that maybe us as well, we didn't make the effort to open up.
Mm. So, going to your event and your actual competition, were there any problems or challenges that were unusual or?
I had an experience that I was not prepared for. I was on the platform and we were in the finals. I had three dives to do, and so unfortunately I dove behind I dove in front of the favorite Mexican diver. And so I would get up to do a dive three times, and everybody in the pool was whistling and making noise while I was trying to do my dive. So it was one of those experiences that I was not prepared for. I had no idea what was going on. I do remember the first time I was going to do that, my first dive under that experience, under that situation, I went over to the side of the platform and looked over at the referee. He was a Mexican, and he just shrugged his shoulders. And I was really disappointed in that. I thought, come on, you know, you can do something here. And he wouldn't do anything. And I thought that was a little bit, I don't know what you call it, but it wasn't a good deal. It wasn't one of those things where you would say, hey, you know, this could be better. And so that was the experience I had, it hurt me and kept me from doing my very best. I don't know if I would have done better than I did or not, for sure, but I know it didn't help me. That's that much I know. So that was the experience I had.
Mm-hmm. What did you do immediately after your event? Did you relax or did you go to watch other events? Did you speak with family?
Yeah, I ended up, I would go because the volleyball event venue was right there by the, you know, connected to the pool, then I would go watch the volleyball. That was an exciting event. I never realized what volleyball did, but they were really good, and it was very exciting. I also, my girlfriend who eventually became my wife, and we became engaged. Afterwards we got a chance to do some things after that. So yeah, I had a chance to lay back a little bit and enjoy the Mexican people, and we fell in love with Mexico.
Oh, so what kind of things did you do? Where did you travel to, or what events did you go to?
Well, we didn't do anything as far as events, except for, like I said, I just went to the venues there by the pool at the volleyball, but you know, she and I were able to go to some of the ruins, you know, some of the ruins there nearby, and then we went to Guadalajara, for example, and things like that. So we did some fun things like that afterwards.
Oh, so 68 was the first year that they started drug testing in the summer games. Did you remember hearing anything about this, or did you or anyone you know get tested?
No, I didn't. I think I thought that's what they did maybe at the track and field, but I never even considered that or thought about it at the swimming pool, you know, in our venue.
Mm-hmm. Since you were friends with some of the women swimmers and divers, did you remember hearing anything about the gender verification tests that were conducted in 1968?
Oh, no, I didn't. I never heard about that until you just said it just now. I didn't realize there was one.
I think it was just a cheek swab chromosome analysis just to make sure that they were chromosomally female.
I did not know that.
So you mentioned the Smith and Carlos protest on the medal stand and your feelings of being naive and not realizing that there, you know, were political statements being made or planned for the games, but what are your feelings about this today? Have they changed at all?
No, not really. I feel a certain amount of disappointment in people or countries or entities, whatever, trying to make a statement at the Olympic Games. I feel like that's not part of the deal. You know, I feel like that we're all humans, we're all making mistakes, we're all trying to do better, and that instead of doing something like that, we should be trying to become better friends and understand more clearly kind of who we are and why we're doing what we're doing, and we can we can disagree. We don't have to necessarily all believe the same exact thing at all. But I think that we just need to have that humanity that says, hey, you know, you're a person and I'm a person and we have some differences, but we can do better, and let's see what we can do, our commonalities, let's see what we can do to get even closer. And that's how I see it. You know, that's kind of my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have said that back then, but I can see that's what I would say now. I mean, I don't think that politics are a good thing for the Olympics.
Mm. So were you there for the closing ceremony?
I wasn't, no.
Okay.
No.
Is this when you were traveling or?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We went to, like I say, went to Guadalajara and stuff like that. So we weren't there for that.
For you personally, what was the most memorable or meaningful part of competing in the 68 Olympic Games?
Well, I mean, While probably the worst thing was that, I the whistling and so forth when I was doing my final three dives for the a medal, that was probably, as bad as that was probably the thing that, taught me probably the most is that sort of thing can happen, and that you have to be prepared for every situation that you could never possibly think of, and you have to be able to put your mind and your soul into what you're doing in a focused manner that kind of contains you within this little area that you have control over and that can't be invaded by other issues, and that's a valuable thing to be able to do, I think, is to be able to focus your life in a certain time and place and in order for you to accomplish all the things that you possibly can.
Mm-hmm. In your opinion, what makes the 1968 U.S. Olympic team stand out from the other years? What would be the legacy of the 1968 team?
Well, unfortunately, I think that Juan Carlos and those guys, doing that probably is one of the biggest legacies of that Olympic Games. But I think Bob Beamon and a few others that really did some outstanding things. That Bob Beamon to me was the hero of the games. I just thought that was the coolest when I saw it on TV there, but it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Definitely, it was quite something. So I want to talk a little bit about amateurism then versus now. What are your experience, thoughts, feelings, reflections on amateurism?
Well, I think there's a certain amount of place that has, but I feel like I don't know. It's like I said, I went to work out in the morning and went to work out in the afternoon. My family had no recourse for any other thing, and so I just feel like there should be a way to help people to to do their very best if possible. And I like the idea of of USOC. They try to provide an opportunity for you to work and to work out. By connecting you with some business, and I think that's the way that it should go. Now, each governing body has their own way of doing it. But U.S. Diving, for example, today will pay the expenses of a diver who is really actually probably going to go to the Olympics and represent us. And I think that's a good thing. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It's not all good. I think that, like I say, I think it's better to have, work opportunities, because the thing is this, when I finished the Olympics, there were a lot of people who were my age, who I graduated from high school, for example, who were already involved in their careers and having a lot of having experience and making money. And I think that's a big deal, having gone to a career and being able to get on your way and things like this. Whereas for me I had no experience, no nothing by the time I finished, no money when I finished the Olympics. So it was a tough thing, because you don't just jump into a career. You always have to get that experience, and you have to build that from there. And so, right or wrong, that's the way I see it. I think amateurism is fine, but I think it's better to help people who have to really either get a chance to get some experience in the work field, or provide the money or at least the expenses to allow them to practice, you know, so that they can represent the United States.
Mm-hmm. What impact has your involvement in the Olympic movement and being an Olympian had on your overall life?
Well, the main thing is simply twofold. I would say just the satisfaction of having done, you know, having done the very best that you can do and seeing how far you can go with that, and that satisfaction that comes from that. And then also the fact that because I went to the Olympics, some people are willing to allow you to have a job that I'm doing right now. For example, I'm diving coach at Brigham Young University, and that's one of the main reasons I am, is because they think that I know something about diving, you know. So those two things right there, to earn a living and to have the satisfaction of having done all that you can do and everything that you can possibly do to do your best, is a great experience. And that is something that you can't, there's money can't buy that. You know, there's no other way to do it. I think, sure, you know, other people get money for doing that, but really money doesn't give you that satisfaction. You know, it comes from having done everything you can do for a long period of time to be as expert as you possibly can be and see what you can do with that.
Mm-hmm. What one piece of advice would you give to today's Olympic hopeful?
Well, I would say, you know, first of all, be committed to what you're doing. That's number one. That's the number one thing is commitment. And the second thing is, hey, you know, as I said before in this beginning of our thing here, our interview, is that, you know, you can't, just because you're going to do your very, very best, there are no guarantees. That you're going to do your best, and that has got to be the, you know, your goals are going to be right up there, and go ahead and have those goals. But know that when it's all over with, that, you know, you if you've done your best, you've done your best, and that's the, there is no shame, and there's no regretting, and there's no thing that can be better than that, just doing everything you can to do your best. So that's my, that's what I would say to anyone.
Mm-hmm. So you've remained in diving after 68. You were involved competitively in diving, and then you've worked in diving into your present situation now. Can you summarize your career in diving up to the present day?
Well, just that, you know, I feel like, you know, the summation is that I felt like I could help divers become good divers by the fact that I went through all the different things you could possibly go through. You know, you get injuries, you get, you know, disappointments, you get, you know, the worst things that can happen to you pretty much will happen to you. And yet some of the best things that can possibly happen will happen to you as well. And that's the thing I try to get people, divers, to understand, is that you got to appreciate all the good things that come along, because there are a lot of good things that happen along the way. And then you got to look at the negative things, the things that aren't so good, and not put too much on that. Don't let that, just keep that as a reminder of how things can go. That things can be great, but things can also not go well, and you have to be, and understanding that that's the way it is, and then prepare yourself and be ready for the good things. You know, do the things that you can for the good things.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see your career in diving going in the next few years?
Basically, I'm going to be retiring fairly soon, you know, within the next couple of 2 or 3 years. So, I don't see, you know, my career going much further than that. I was fortunate enough they selected me as a coach for the Beijing Games, not a coach, as a judge for the Beijing Games. So basically, that's been the highlight or the result or the rewards of all the hard work that I put into diving, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Well, before we close the interview, is there anything else that you would like to tell me?
I think you've covered it. I think you've done a great job. I can't even believe you asked every question like that. Yeah, it's been great. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time and for being so generous with your memories. Keith, I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Desiree. Appreciate it very much.